Good morning. My name's Clinton, and I'm a member of the 915 congregation. Today's Bible reading will be Song of Songs, chapter 5. If we can, you can find it in your pew Bibles on page 470, and we'll start from verse 1. I've come into my garden, my sister, my bride. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I've drunk my wine and my milk. Eat, friends, and drink. Drink your fill of love. I slept, but my heart was awake. Listen, my beloved is knocking. Open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my flawless one. My head is drenched in dew, my hair with the dampness of the night. I have taken off my robe. Must I put it on again? I have washed my feet. Must I soil them again? My beloved thrust his hand through the latch opening. My heart began to pound for him. I arose to open for my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with flowing myrrh on the handles of the bolt. I opened for my beloved, but my beloved had left. He was gone. My heart sank at his departure. I looked for him, but did not find him. I called him, but he did not answer. The watchmen found me as they made their rounds in the city. They beat me, they bruised me, they took away my cloak, those watchmen of the wall. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, if you find my beloved, what will you tell him? Tell him I am faint with love. How is your beloved better than others, most beautiful of women? How is your beloved better than others that you so charge us? My beloved is radiant and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. His head is pure as gold, his hair is wavy and black as raven. His eyes are like doves by the water streams, washed in milk, mounted like jewels. His cheeks are like beds of spice, yielding perfume. His lips are like lilies, dripping with myrrh. His arms are rods of gold, set with topaz. His body is like polished ivory, decorated with lapis lazuli. His legs are pillars of marble, set on bases of pure gold. His appearance is like Lebanon, choices as its cedars. His mouth is sweetness itself. He is altogether lovely. This is my beloved. This is my friend, daughters of Jerusalem.
Thanks, mate. Well, good morning, friends. It's great to be with you this morning. And over the next couple of weeks, I'm preaching each fortnight, and each time I've asked one of the women in our congregation to come and just share a reflection with you on the topic that I'll be speaking on. And this morning, Alison's going to do that in a little while. But I want to start by telling you that early on in our relationship, I was unfaithful to Nikki. We had made arrangements at around this time of year to go to Manly with her sister and watch the migration of the whales. And I promised her I'd be there. I made the arrangements. I said, I will make sure I come and pick you up. And then she rang and I was at home and she said, where are you? And I said, at home? And she was like, I thought we had an arrangement. And I said, what arrangement? And she said, I'll talk to you later. I reneged on a promise. I was not steadfast or dependable. And I did not keep my word, and I was unfaithful. I was suddenly a person who Nikki could no longer rely on, whose loyalty she could no longer depend on, and whose word she could no longer unreservedly trust. Now, as you may have guessed, things have turned out okay. But I learned a good lesson right then. Faithfulness matters. Faithfulness matters. And that is what I want you to go home with today, if nothing else, that faithfulness matters. Now, we're in week 3 of our Song of Songs series, and over the next few Sundays, we're going to look at some of the essential characteristics of love this morning, that love is faithful. And straight up, I hope that you can see that the way I'm using the language of faithfulness is very much different to how we might expect that language to be used out in the world in which we live. And the reason for that is that when God uses the language of faithfulness, he uses it in a much broader way than our culture does, where within our culture, it often just refers to not sexually cheating on your spouse. It's all very binary and simplistic. And I said to one member of my family this week that that's the way that I think people often think about faithfulness. And he said to me, if that's all we think about faithfulness, that's a pretty dodgy low bar. And he's right. Because what God means by faithfulness is so much bigger and so much more beautiful. So I want to take you on a journey, a step back, to broaden the lens for us on faithfulness this morning, and to see that faithfulness is seen in the connection of your thoughts, your hopes, your words, your actions, your whole mindset in love towards those around you, both friends and family, and for those who are married, your spouse. It's a posture of the heart that says, I do what I say, and I honour my word in my thoughts and in my actions for the good of others. So let me show you this in the Bible, starting with God himself, who is numerous times described as faithful and therefore is our model and guide for what faithfulness might look like. Indeed, we could go to so many places throughout the scriptures. I took the staff this week to Psalm 89, and Psalm 89 would be well worth your study and reading to see the faithfulness of God. Let me just read the first five verses. I will sing of the Lord's great love forever. With my mouth I will make your faithfulness known through all generations. I will declare that your love stands firm forever, that you've established your faithfulness in heaven itself. You've said, I made a covenant with my chosen one. I've sworn to David my servant. I will establish your line forever and make your throne firm through all generations. The heavens praise your wonders, Lord, your faithfulness too in the assembly of the holy ones. There's so many things that you can unpack out of Psalm 89, but I want to just point out two things here. And first is that faithfulness is praised equally with God's love. We often talk about the love of God, but actually here in Psalm 89, it actually sort of says the love of God and the faithfulness of God are of equal importance and wonder. Faithfulness is no small thing in God's character and for God. And secondly, faithfulness is intimately connected with doing what you say. God said, I will create David's line forever. And that's just what God did, because he does what he says. Now, we could wind our way through much of the Old Testament into the New Testament, and you'll see time and time again what these verses are saying, that God's faithfulness is to be treasured and is seen in the way he remains steadfast to his word and promise. He's not fickle, he's steadfast. He's not forgetful, he's a promise keeper. He does not give up, and his love endures forever. When God speaks, what he says happens. He is the never-changing God who always does his word. And so one theologian, Arthur Pink, said, he never forgets, never fails, never falters, never forfeits his word. To every declaration of promise or prophecy, the Lord has exactly adhered. Every engagement of covenant, he will make good. And so it's no wonder that the church, generation after generation after generation, has sung, Great is thy faithfulness. Now, this is all part of his glory, but it actually benefits those who sit under God's hand. And so Psalm 52 is just one of many places where we read something like this. But I am like an olive tree flourishing in the house of God. I trust in God's faithful love forever and ever. God does his word, and it's for our good. And that is faithfulness. And friends, it's this same faithfulness that you are called to in all of your relationships, not just in marriage, but with family and friends, with co-workers and neighbours. Ephesians chapter 5 verse 1 says, be imitators of God, follow his example. And as you hear those words, feel the unfathomable weight in the matter of faithfulness. Hear also Paul's words though in Galatians 5. Because faithfulness is a fruit of the Spirit. And I take it that that means that not only we're called to this, but that it's hard. And so God drives this within us as well. So Galatians chapter 5, verse 22 and 23, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Now, the Spirit of God in you drives you towards personal faithfulness, personal dependability. He drives you to fasten yourself to your word. He drives you to fasten yourself to those who you love. He drives you to be a person of firmness and steadfastness, honesty, safety, and certainty. Because faithful people are true to their word, their promises, their beliefs, their commitments. Their whole lives are shaped by their words, their promises, their beliefs, their commitments. Every action flows from and is connected to their word, their promises, their beliefs, their commitments. Indeed, faithfulness is not just marked by what you see in a person or hear from a person. It's that internal disposition that entirely focuses on absolute commitment to the good of the object of faithfulness. And that means that faithfulness encompasses every thought, every moment, every act, every belief, every decision. Can you see that it's a high bar? Way higher than just not having sex with someone else who you're not married to. Faithfulness is all of your thoughts and thinking connected to your words and actions. How do you do that? Well, you do it by fleeing temptation and by allowing God to empower you to be the same as He is. By working at a person who is going to be dependable. Working at being a person who is going to be trustworthy and honest, who can be counted on in good times and bad. You know, faithful spouses, friends, relatives, co-workers, they don't abandon people at the first sign of trouble or when they need help. Rather, they stick with you, willing to sacrifice their good for your good, that they might remain true to their word. I take it that's why Jesus cried out in the Garden of Gethsemane, "Yet not my will, but yours be done." As he was faithfully fulfilling the plan that God and he had put in place, even though it was hard for him and it was for our good, that is faithfulness. And you know that a faithful person produces comfort and calm in all the relationships that they find themselves in, because doubt about a person's motives and doubt about a person's actions and doubt about what a person thinks just drifts away when faithfulness stands at the centre. Now, can I say we're creeping up on Song of Songs and some of the message of Song of Songs and marriage, but all this has an application over all of your life. And I thought it would be helpful to just pause and ask, what might a faithful friend look like? Now, can I say when I put this heading in my talk and thought, yeah, I'll make a few comments about that, I realised that what a faithful friend looks like is actually a sermon series. So you might want to take that question into your growth group this week and actually just talk together in your growth group. What does a faithful friend look like? But for now, let me just share four things that I think are helpful related to faithfulness and friendship. Number one, you'll tell the truth even when it's hard to say or hard to hear. Number two, you'll turn up when you say you will and do what you say you will. Number three, you'll only share news that is yours or that you have permission to share. Number four, you'll show up when things are good and bad and everything in between. Now, I hope you can see there that might extend into not just friendships, but with your neighbours and even into your marriage. But I hope you can see that your word publicly displays your heart and your character. So how you treat your word, what you do with your word, reveals your heart. As Jesus says, the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. Now, there are so many things I'd love to explore here, and that's why I said maybe take this question into your growth group and think about faithful friendships, but we've got to get to Song of Songs at some point. And I want to launch into Song of Songs and what it has to say about faithfulness from the reality that the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. And in Song of Songs, the whole set of poems is littered with yearnings and marks and words of faithfulness. As you open up Song of Songs, it's almost as if the whole song is announcing that the best of marriages will be marked by this constant, faithful love. I hope that as you read it through in your growth group that you will see, have seen that the lovers are completely committed to each other in mind and word and deed and body. They have eyes for no one else. So in chapter 2:16, my beloved is mine and I am his. Again in 6:3, I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine. There is an absolute confidence and faithfulness that we are just for and with and loyal to each other. But then there are all these references to the solidity and stability of their relationship. They've no question about the faithful commitment of the other person to them. And there's a constancy, therefore, and a security, therefore, that just flows out of this relationship where there's nothing to fear and nothing to hide and nothing to worry about. And so in chapter 4 and verse 6, we read, day and night he will be hers and hers alone. It doesn't matter where he is or what he's doing, and night times where often things go wrong, she says in chapter 4, verse 6, until the day breaks and the shadows flee, I will go to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of incense. Again, in chapter 5, she's challenged the chapter we just read about whether he really is that good for her. And she goes into a long exposition of how beautiful he is and how wonderful he is that ends with these words at the start of chapter 6. The friends say, where has your beloved gone, most beautiful of women? Which way did your beloved turn that we may look for him for you? It's almost like, hang on, you say he's great, but he's missing. Shall we go looking for him? And she's completely chill. My beloved's gone down to his garden, to the beds of spices, to browse in the gardens and to gather lilies. I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine. But he browses among the lilies. He goes about his day. And I've nothing to fear of the things that he does. I've nothing to fear when he's away. Because I'm completely confident in who he is and that I am his and he is mine. And so the whole song, I think, peaks in terms of faithfulness with this marvelous expression in chapter 7, verse 10. That Phil read for us before, I belong to my beloved, and his desire is for me. No one else is in my frame of vision. The one he has promised himself to is the only one. The one he has given his word to is his alone. And her confidence in him is rock solid. There's an unyielding firmness, an unyielding steadfastness, an unyielding safety and certainty in their union, which cannot, will not ever be betrayed. He never forgets. He never fails. He never falters. And he never forfeits his word. And neither does she. Here is the glory of marital love that is faithful. It is a commitment of the heart that is true to your word and manifests in thoughts and actions that are dependable and steadfast and honest. It's a commitment of the heart that produces an environment where trust blossoms, where security is sure, and where there is no doubt that the person you are married to is there for your good. They pursue your good alone and will sacrifice for your good as well. It's a commitment to truly live out the promise to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish as long as you both shall live. And when I stand here and marry people, and I ask them this question, and they say, I will, and then they make the promises themselves, at the very end, I get goosebumps every time when they say, this is my solemn vow and promise. If you're married, faithfulness is your solemn vow and promise. And the song celebrates this faithful human love. And so it stands in stark contrast to our culture. Our culture, I think, actually pictures faithfulness against freedom. Too often, true human freedom is said to be found in pursuing your heart, pursuing whatever you want to do, rather than honoring your word. I was at a wedding recently, and the wedding vows were more along the lines of, you know, as long as our love lasts. Wow. That's a low bar, isn't it? And here's the truth. True freedom is found in lifelong faithfulness. And that fuels security and honor and thankfulness in relationships marked by faithfulness. You can be you. And you don't need to be afraid. You don't need to hide. You don't need to pretend. You don't need to be anything more than who you are when faithfulness characterizes your relationships, because you're loved no matter what. Because you just know the other person's mind doesn't drift to other options, and neither does yours. You just know that the other person's mind and yours actually drifts to the joy of the husband or wife who is before them. It's not easy, and it takes work. And sometimes it requires an ongoing daily choice. But it's beautiful, and it's freeing, and it's delightful, and it honors God and benefits everyone. Now, you know, Song of Songs contains these marvelous descriptions of young, youthful bodies. You've read it, you've seen it. Your teeth are like a flock of sheep. Your navel is like a rounded goblet. Your neck is like an ivory tower. Your arms are like rods of gold. Your legs are like pillars of marble. I looked at myself in the mirror recently, and let me tell you, gravity and the winds of time are a thing. Your teeth are more like dirty chalk. Your neck is like a discarded snake skin, and your arms are like saggy bananas in the fruit bowl for too long. And yet faithful love says, I don't care. Faithful love says, I don't care. Because you're mine. And my desire is for you. I belong to him and she belongs. I belong to him and he belongs to me. And friends, when you live in a marriage like that, you honor God and you keep in step with the Spirit. Our relationships characterized by faithfulness provide a foundation for human flourishing. And for those who are married, I wonder if that describes your marriage. Well, briefly before Alison gets up, I'm going to give you some homework, and then I have two challenging words. Homework for this week. You can get out your pen and paper now, get out your diary, put it in the back, get your mum to sign it. Homework. If you are married, and even if you're not married, find a friend, your best friend. Have an honest chat about faithfulness in your marriage this week. That may be really hard, but have an honest chat about faithfulness. And if you're not married, find a friend and have an honest chat with your friend about faithfulness. And then two challenging words. Number one, when you are ready to faithfully love like this, you're ready to think about getting married. In fact, I would say that if you're someone who doesn't keep your word, you probably should not be dating. Don't inflict yourself upon someone else. And secondly, can I say, if your marriage is not characterized by this sort of faithful love, but you recognize that it's actually characterized by a guarded lack of trust and lack of honesty and lack of intimacy, then I want to suggest to you the homework might not be the best place to start. Actually, yourself getting some help with a professional counselor to help you just unpack your thinking and to start to rebuild things yourself from the inside out might be the best place to start. The biggest enemy of faithfulness is lies and deceit. So if you're hiding something from a marriage partner or a friend, that's probably a sign that there is some work to be done. Friends, we're all in relationships with others, and faithfulness does matter. It's more than just doing your word. It's a heart posture towards the people in your life. Being for the good of the other person in all you do and think, believe, hope, pray. We're not all married, but we all know people who are, even if it's just our parents. So will you pray that you and they can be faithful as God has called us to be faithful? But let me just remind you this morning as we finish of the gospel. Is that even when we mess up, Jesus is for us. We read in 2 Timothy 2, if we are faithless, he remains faithful. Because he can't disown himself. His very self is just embedded in faithfulness, and God will never give up his self. So he's always going to be faithful towards you, in and through the cross. And so how great is our merciful, faithful, promising God.